I want to begin my sermon with a poem by the great Scottish poet Robert Burns, whose birthday recently passed. And I'm rather of the opinion that when the poems of Robert Burns are read publicly, they should be read by somebody who has an honest Scottish accent whenever possible. And luckily for us, we have two such people with us today, and so I'm going to invite my friend Craig Smith, who is here with his wife Michelle from East Kilbride in Scotland, to come up and read this poem by Robert Burns. So. You will.
Good morning. So last night, Ben sprang upon me that was to read this poem. I'm not very good at speaking in public, so bear with me. O thou great being, what thou art surpasses me to know. Yet sure I am that known to thee are all thy works below. Thy creature here before thee stands, and wretched and distressed. Yet sure those ills that wring my soul obey thy high behest. Sure thou, Almighty, canst not act for cruelty or wrath. O free my weary eyes from tears, or close them fast in death.
Thank you. The final stanza of the poem is, but if I must afflicted be to suit some wise design, then man my soul with firm resolves to bear and not repine. And that last stanza of the poem speaks of God strengthening our souls with firm resolve when we're called upon to suit some wise design. And there are, alas, any number of occasions when God's high behest calls us to live out our faith with resolve. But this morning I want to talk about one kind of resolve often required from us, and that is truth-telling. Truth-telling and the courage often needed for the work of saying what is true. And I have to be honest with you here. This is a really important issue for preachers. And so this is sort of a very personal sermon. It's an important issue for preachers because preachers are called upon to be truth tellers. We're called upon to stand in the pulpit week in and week out and say things that are true, not just because they are accurate, but true because they are good and beautiful and meaningful in ways that have the power perhaps to transform someone's life or even to change the world. But here's the hard part. Truth isn't always welcome in churches. Truth is especially unwelcome when truth challenges the status quo, seeks to undermine the power of empire, confront the bullies who rule the world, or open the eyes of those long blind to human suffering. These are truths that can be hard to talk about in any situation. But I think there is something about churches that makes it especially hard to talk about hard truths. Congregations are happiest when no one is upset, when everyone gets along, and truth-telling sometimes can be unsettling. In fact, I would say there are maybe only two kinds of pastors who don't fear truth-telling from the pulpit. Two kinds of pastors. Pastors who support the status quo, and pastors who are lucky enough to serve the congregation of Montclair Presbyterian Church. And I mean that sincerely. Talitha and I are extremely fortunate because you want us to agitate from the pulpit, which means we sort of get to pass the buck on mustering the courage necessary for truth-telling in the pulpit. We tell you truth on Sunday so you can tell truth every other day of the week, which is how it's supposed to work. Talitha and I are your teaching elders. We teach, and then you join us in the work of truth-telling. Dearly beloved, you are beautiful. And few pastors have it so good. And I know this because I've served other congregations. Congregations which, by the way, also are beautiful. Congregations which, in their own way, are brave. But still, my first call was to the Salinas Valley, a little church in the Salinas Valley. It was a congregation of lovely people, many of whom were connected to the agriculture industry. And I could say many things from that pulpit. But even as a 25-year-old greenhorn, I knew better than to speak of my admiration for Cesar Chavez. Hell, it was even quoting John Steinbeck could be risky in that community in those days, because some people still knew the Steinbeck family. Then, when I was in San Jose, I was a little less careful, and I watched people walk out of the sanctuary when I preached against the war in Iraq. And I read membership resignation letters that dripped with rhetorical acid because I was outspoken in my support for marriage equality. And it still hurts. But it's not a pain that I've borne alone. Last week, the Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist and Harvard Divinity School-trained professional truth-teller Chris Hedges wrote an article in which he chastised the American mainline Protestant churches for our lack of moral courage. In his estimation, we have sold our soul to preserve our increasingly tenuous financial solvency. As an example, he spoke of an Episcopal seminary in New York City which has sold part of its campus to a developer of high-end condominiums, which will keep the seminary afloat at the cost of gentrifying the surrounding neighborhood. He wrote about mainline Protestantism's inability to speak against America's imperial wars in ways that are meaningful, and much of what he says rings true to me, and I know that it's been an issue for Chris Hedges for years, because one time, years ago, I had the pleasure of driving him from San Francisco to an anti-war speaking engagement in Palo Alto, and we spent most of the journey wondering together why my fellow pastors weren't doing more to speak out against the war. And here's what I'd say to Chris Hedges if I had the opportunity to talk to him once more about ecclesiastical silence on the great moral issues of our time. I would tell Chris that we, and by that I mean American churches in general, but American pastors in particular, we have lost our nerve, and not entirely without reason. Over the years, American mainline Protestants have spoken out, and you know this because no one has spoken out more or louder than you at Montclair Presbyterian Church. Mainline Protestants have supported civil rights. We've opposed the war in Vietnam. We declared that you cannot hug your children with nuclear arms. We wanted the United States to stay out of Nicaragua and El Salvador. We divested from South Africa. We've been firm in our resolve to stand against the Israeli occupation of Palestine. We've stood up to mining interest in Bolivia, and we have declared in a firm voice that Black Lives Matter. And all of that is celebrated by you here at Montclair Presbyterian Church, but in other congregations, not so much. Mainline churches are losing membership and closing their doors at an alarming rate, and there are lots of reasons for this. But at least part of it has to do with the fact that truth-telling really isn't all that popular. A lot of folks get angry. A lot of folks got angry and left when the churches started telling the truth, and many of those who stayed behind have long memories. I kid you not. On several occasions in my life and work as a pastor, both within the churches I've served and in the larger denomination, I have been verbally accosted by current and former Presbyterians, all red-faced, with veins popping and spittle flying, angry and agitated because the denomination provided financial assistance to Angela Davis. I was in preschool at the time. But still, whatever. Over the years, the folks in American Protestant denomination who've gotten angry at the truth-telling have tended symbolically to do to truth-tellers what the folks in Nazareth tried literally to do to Jesus. Remember, Jesus went to his hometown, to his childhood synagogue, and the good folks there invited him to read scripture and to preach to them, which he did, but he made the mistake of telling the truth, and it pissed off the locals. He started by talking about how God was moving to do all sorts of good things, restoring sight to the blind, setting captives free, preaching good news to the poor, proclaiming the year of God's favor, the Jubilee year, when all the land is returned to its original owners and all debts are forgiven. Wonderful. excellent. But then Jesus harshed everyone's mellow by saying that this was all happening to other people. The truth he told involved the truth that God was alive and moving in the world, helping folks who were outside of the tribe. Maybe God was even showing grace and love to those reviled as enemies. It was a hard truth, as many truths are hard. So if truth-telling is so hard, why should we tell the truth? Why even bother being strong and courageous? Why tell the truth when truth-telling can make folks so mad? We're not supposed to make people angry, right? So what's the point? Well, I believe we should have courage to tell truth because the alternative to truth-telling is awful. If you look back at the history of the Christian faith, my guess is that you will be proudest to be associated with the Christian faith when you remember the times in history when the church has had the courage to tell the truth. And not telling the truth means people in future years will look back on us and not be proud of us. Think about it. Are you not happy to be associated with the church when you remember that during the Reformation, Christians had the courage to embrace the truths found in science and in the humanities? When 200 years later, the church finally started telling the truth about slavery, declaring it an evil institution, regardless of what the Bible says. Are you not proud to be affiliated with the church when you remember that 100 years after we started talking about slavery, we also started telling truths about the condition of workers exploited by industrial economies? Or when still later, a few German Christians had the courage to stand up and speak truth about the Nazi-dominated church, state church in Germany, often at the cost of their own lives? Are you not proud of the church when you remember that Christians had the courage to speak truth in the face of Jim Crow and apartheid, the arms race, and against the wars in Southeast Asia, Central America, and the Persian Gulf? The truth spoken by these Christians is the same truth we must continue to speak. It takes courage, but the rewards are eternal. Whenever I hear the story from Luke that Cheryl read to us this morning, I think about what it has been like for me to preach at my own childhood church in Mendocino. In this morning's lesson, Jesus said that a prophet isn't welcome in his hometown, and for the most part, my experience of preaching at the Mendocino Presbyterian Church has proved that I am no prophet. Because for the most part, I have been well received there. Except the last time I preached, which happened about the same time I was first talking to this congregation's pastor nominating committee. During that last sermon in Mendocino, I mentioned my support for marriage equality. It was just an aside. It was just an example of how folks disagree on all kinds of issues. I wasn't intending it to be a big deal, but it was truth enough to make a few people mad, or even just the right people mad. I think a lot of people liked it, but a few people didn't. And I've not been asked back. And it's a shame. But you know what? It's worth it. It's worth it because after the service, the father of one of my childhood friends, a man who was an important part of the village that raised me, a wise and good man who taught me a lot and put up with a lot from me as a child, he came and he gave me a hug, and there were tears in his eyes because my childhood friend, his daughter, is a lesbian. And the truth of God's wide embrace of the full beauty of human diversity is not a truth that has been spoken with sufficient frequency from that pulpit. It was kind of a mistake that I told that truth. There was nothing eloquent, nothing even particularly intelligent about what I said in Mendocino, but it turns out that it was a needed truth. And it leaves me wondering about this morning's lesson from Luke. I wonder if maybe not everyone in Nazareth was trying to push Jesus off the cliff. I wonder if maybe standing off to the side, someone's mother was watching with tears in her eyes because her daughter had fallen in love with a Roman soldier. And Jesus' words gave her hope that perhaps her daughter was not beyond the reach of God's love and grace after all. And I wonder if maybe that mother's tears made Jesus' disastrous sermon in Nazareth, worth all the effort. So, dearly beloved, first let me thank you. I love that I can speak truth from this pulpit without needing to gird up my loins with courage. Thank you. And then let me cheer you on as together we seek the courage to speak the kind of truth that heals many wounds, the truth that has the potential to set things right in the world, the truth that sets us free.